Number one. Proclaim a new era and set up a...
Tonight's first robots are friendly ones. Matthew Battles will read an excerpt from Neil R. Jones's 1931 pulp fiction, The Jameson Satellite, which concerns a Professor Jameson who has arranged for his body to be cryopreserved in a rocket orbiting the Earth, where it is discovered 40 million years later by alien machine men. It was the first in a series of 21 Jameson stories. Asimov says that it inspired him as a teenager to write about benevolent robots who could serve man with decency. In order to prevent the studio audience from laughing when a particular planet whose name strikes some people as funny is mentioned, I'll say it now, Uranus. Matthew Battles.
Chapter 1, 40 million years after. Entering within the boundaries of the solar system, a long, dark, pointed craft sped across the realms of space towards the tiny point of light which marked the dull red ball of the dying sun which would someday lie cold and dark forever. Like a huge meteor, it flashed into the solar system from another chain of planets far out in the illimitable universe of stars and worlds, heading towards the great red sun at inconceivable speed. Within the interior of the space traveler, queer creatures of metal labored at the controls of the space flyer which juggernauted on its way towards the far-off solar luminary. Rapidly across the orbits of Neptune and Uranus, and headed sunward, the bodies of these queer creatures were square blocks of a metal closely resembling steel, while for appendages the metal cube was upheld by four jointed legs capable of movement, a set of six tentacles, all metal like the rest of the body, curved outward from the other upper half of the cubic body. These were the Zoromes of the planet Zor, which rotated on its way around a star millions of light-years distant from our solar system. The Zoromes, several hundred thousand years before, had reached a stage in science where they searched for immortality and eternal relief from bodily ills and various deficiencies of flesh and blood anatomy. They had sought freedom from death and had found it, but at the same time they had destroyed the propensities for birth. And for several hundred thousand years there had been no births and few deaths in the history of the Zoromes. This strange race of people had built their own mechanical bodies, and by operation upon one another had removed their brains to the metal heads from which they directed the functions and movements of their inorganic anatomies. There had been no deaths due to worn-out bodies. When one part of the mechanical men wore out, it was replaced by a new part, and so the Zoromes continued living their immortal lives, which saw few casualties. It was true that, since the innovation of the machines, there had been a few accidents which had seen the destruction of the metal heads with the brains. These were irreparable. Such cases had been few, however, and the population of Zor had decreased but little. The machine men of Zor had no use for atmosphere, and had it not been for the terrible coldness of space, could just as well have existed in the ether void as upon some planet. Their metal bodies, especially their metal-encased brains, did require a certain amount of heat, though they were able to exist comfortably in temperatures which would have instantly frozen to death a flesh-and-blood creature. The most popular pastime among the machine men of Zor was the exploration of the universe. This afforded them a never-ending source of interest in the discovery of the variegated inhabitants and conditions of the various planets on which they came to rest. Hundreds of spaceships were sent out in all directions, many of them being upon their expeditions for hundreds of years before they returned once more to the home planet of far-off Zor. This particular spacecraft of the Zoromes had entered the solar system whose planets were gradually circling in closer to the dull red ball of the declining sun. Several of the machine men of the spacecraft's crew, which numbered some 50 individuals, were examining the various planets of this particular planetary system carefully through telescopes possessing immense power. These machine men had no names, and were indexed according to letters and numbers. They conversed by means of thought impulses, and were neither capable of making a sound vocally, nor of hearing one uttered. "Where shall we go?" queried one of the men at the controls, questioning another, who stood by his side examining a chart on the wall. "They all appear to be dead worlds, 4R3579, replied the one addressed. "But the second planet from the sun appears to have an atmosphere which might sustain a few living creatures. And the third planet may also prove interesting, for it has a satellite. We shall examine the inner planets first of all, and explore the outer ones later if we decide it is worth the time." "Too much trouble for nothing," ventured 9G721. "This system of planets offers us little but what we have seen many times before in our travels." The sun is so cool that it cannot sustain the more common life on its planets, the type of life forms we usually find in our travels. We should have visited a planetary system with a brighter sun. You speak of common life, remarked 25X987. What of the uncommon life? Have we not found life existent on cold, dead planets, with no sunlight and atmosphere at all? Yes, we have, admitted 9721. But such occasions are exceedingly rare. The possibility exists, however, even in this case, reminded 4R3579. And what if we do spend a bit of unprofitable time in this one unplanetary system? Haven't we all an endless lifetime before us? Eternity is ours.